Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dragon Sold by Jess Mountefield. Narrated by Elizabeth Klett. Chapter 1. Forcing myself to concentrate, I tried to sense where Min Sheng was, using only the air around me. Before I could fully immerse myself, he caught me on the back with a nunchuck. Spinning and using the air to make me move faster than humanly possible, I caught the end of the weapon and flicked it out of his grasp.
"Impressive disarming, but not the point of this exercise,"
Min Sheng immediately said. "I know," I replied, "but I swear I'm going to be covered in bruises when I can see my skin again." Min Sheng laughed, and when I handed him back the nunchuck, instead of rushing into the blackness around me, he tucked it back in the box of weaponry we'd brought into the forest to train with and turned his flashlight back on. I sighed and stretched, wincing as I aggravated the previously mentioned bruises. Some of them were old injuries, Min Sheng having spent the last 9 days getting Chris or Daisy to stop our RV for the night somewhere remote and dark so we could practice. We were still looking for the sanctuary and following a ball of light that acted as a compass and had been for the better part of 2 weeks. When we traveled in the right direction, the light grew brighter, but we had no way of knowing how far from the correct location we were. It hadn't helped that we'd driven by roundabout routes, making it hard for anyone to follow our trail and making it look a lot like we were tourists on a road trip. And, in a lot of ways, we were. I'd grown up near L.A., but my adopted parents had taken us on vacations to a cabin they had near the Canadian border. I'd run away there when I was young. Until this trip, I'd never been anywhere else in my life. If I hadn't been hiding inside the RV we traveled in during the day, this would have been the best time of my life. As it was, the dragon I'd bonded with, Zephyr, and I were wanted fugitives and had to be on our best behavior. On top of that, my Shisu, Min Sheng, was trying to teach me to use the magical abilities my elven heritage gave me to control the air around me and sense anything moving through it. I sucked at that. While I gathered the assortment of weapons Min Sheng had attacked me with that night, I heard the light thump of Zephyr landing nearby. Not much later, the large bronze dragon stepped into the light. I smiled the moment our eyes met. The large, scaly mouth in front of me opened as he tried to return the gesture and came closer. By the time he was at my side, he was towering above me. In the 2 weeks we'd been on the road, he'd grown at an alarming rate. His body was now so large, he struggled to fit in the RV, but it was his neck and tail that had grown the most. With more maturity, he had changed proportions, and now his long, graceful neck lifted his fearsome horned head above mine. "Did you enjoy your flight?" I asked in my head, the bond between us having led to us being able to hear each other telepathically, not just talk aloud. In fact, for a while, it had been our only method of communication, enhanced by a necklace my ancestor had once worn.
"Always. But it's better when you're with me."
I sighed, knowing what he meant. I'd begun to fly with him before we'd had to flee L.A.
"Okay, next task. Time trials, both of you."
I nodded, looking around for a suitable marker. Min Sheng pointed at a tree to his right. It was farther away than normal, but I had a feeling any complaints would only earn me an even longer distance. Trying to reach for the air around me with my mind, Zephyr and I both lined up and prepared to run. When Min Sheng pressed the stopwatch, we both sprinted forward. Using my control of the air, I pushed it out of our way ahead and then brought it quickly in behind, cycling the process to help us run far faster than the human body normally could. For the most part, it worked, but as I tried to push farther and faster, I had to be careful to balance my efforts and apply the pressure to our bodies in the right places. In Zephyr's case, I also had to anticipate his movements a little more. Something that was fine if we were running in a straight line, but in the dark, in the woods, it was a lot less easy. I had started trying to do this alone, powering myself to go quicker and quicker, until Minxing had declared it hard to even see me. But, as he'd rightly pointed out, Zephyr and I were a team. We needed to get to the same locations at the same time, and Zephyr couldn't easily fly inside buildings now. He was simply too big. It all meant I had to help make him faster as well, and I had to keep us from getting tangled and in each other's way, something that could often happen as we reached our farthest point. Zephyr couldn't turn as well as I could, more limbs making it harder to slow and spin to come back again. His tail often whipped around, too. More than once he'd knocked me off my feet with his tail, wings, or whole body, as his back end had come farther out, and I'd managed to turn almost on the spot. While he needed to be more careful, I could also help him turn. About to do just that, Zephyr's voice appeared in my head. He helped me adjust the air around us, but I was distracted and tried to manipulate it too soon. Instead of it helping him turn in a tighter circle, it missed. His back quarter flicked out and knocked me to the side. I quickly thrust my hand out, jetting air toward the ground to slow myself. Before I hit, I pushed hard enough against the dirt to spring back up and join the little race. With Zephyr now ahead of me, I was stuck playing catch-up for a while. Eventually, however, we both crossed the line, my body ahead of the tip of his tail, but behind the bulk of his torso. Minxing didn't click the stopwatch again until we were both back at our starting points.
22 seconds, and that's still not fast enough, Minxing said.
I sighed, hearing something akin to frustration. Whatever it was I was training for, I clearly wasn't good enough yet. After taking a swig of water from a canteen and offering it to Zephyr for the same purpose, I lined up to sprint again.
This time, go for max speed on the straights, no matter how badly you make the turn. You lost a lot of time on the return leg in the previous run.
I mumbled something about him saying the exact opposite the day before, but I did my best to speed us up as we set off again. This time we reached the tree faster, and I managed to use Zephyr's warning to spin us both around the corner more quickly. It helped that he didn't knock me over.
20.1 seconds,
Minxing said as we came to a halt again. I sighed. It always took us several attempts to get under 20, and I was generally out of breath for a good long time after. Knowing Minxing would make us do at least 3 more runs before he let us stop only made me feel grumpier. Only when we'd made several attempts and the times had gotten worse did Minxing accept that improvement from practice was outweighed by our exhaustion. Our third run was barely better, but it saw us under 20 seconds, and again we didn't bump into each other. More than a little tired now, both from using my abilities and from sprinting, the fourth run was worse.
Okay, one last attempt, Minxing said. Then we'll move on to our final task this evening.
I nodded, wondering what else he had in store before Daisy or Chris called us back to the RV for dinner.
This time, I want you to try to make one of you a lot faster to go around the corner. Then, as the first speeds up, the second can turn. See if that keeps you from getting tangled together. Then try to come over the finish line together. Either way, I won't stop the watch until you're both home and safe.
Once again, I took a deep breath and tried to focus on the air swirling around me.
You corner first, Zephyr said.
No, you're the slower one to get up to speed again, I replied. You can be accelerating as I turn in a clear space. There was no response, and I almost prodded Zephyr to reply, but I guessed he was focused on getting off to a good start. Within a fraction of a second, Minxing hit the timer again and we sprinted. I put more of my magic behind Zephyr, pushing his bulk to run faster as I moved under my own steam. I was not far behind him as we got to our tree and tried to turn around it. His tail whipped across, and I only just jumped it in time. Losing focus for a moment, I almost collided with another tree, and Zephyr stumbled. You okay? I asked immediately.
I think so. We need to coordinate better.
Pretty sure that's why Minsheng has us practicing.
I have memories of this sort of thing being effortless.
Sadly, I don't. I heard Zephyr sigh as we made it back over the line. We clearly hadn't done as well. Minsheng just shook his head. I exhaled, growing tenser with frustration. For the most part, I found the genetic memories Zephyr kept gaining really useful. But this particular one might actually be hindering us. He could remember something working differently. I'd have given anything to have the memories of Tuviel. Maybe then I wouldn't have been driven out of my own home by an agency hell-bent on making Zephyr and me disappear. I dreaded the possibility that Minsheng might ask us to do it again, but thankfully he put the stopwatch away.
Your final task for the evening. This one is a little different, and I'm not sure how well it will work. But I've read something in the last few days that gives me the idea that it might be possible.
I lifted my eyebrows as Minsheng took a gas mask we'd liberated from an agent out of the training bag. There was only one thing this could be needed for, Zephyr's breath weapon. Whenever he wanted to, Zephyr could exhale a cloud of gas that paralyzed those who breathed it in. But what did I have to do with that? Trying not to be impatient and demand an explanation, I watched Minsheng back up and set up a small cage. It contained a rodent Chris had caught the day before. I'd wondered what it was for.
Zephyr's breath weapon is extremely effective, but it puts him in danger, since he has to get a lot closer to use it. That's not so much of a problem once a dragon is fully mature and his scales are hardened, especially when your opponents only have bows and arrows and swords. But our enemies have guns, and Zephyr is still young.
So we don't want him to get close. I finished for Minsheng, hoping he'd get to the point.
That's where you come in, Nayella,
Minsheng continued.
I believe you have the ability to control Zephyr's gas once he has exhaled it. With the right concentration and some precision, I've been led to believe you can attack people with it. Or, well, sneak up on them with it. I'll leave it up to your imagination as to how exactly you would use it, but the point is that you should be able to.
Right, I replied, still trying to wrap my head around what he meant, but he moved over to the rodent cage and started putting the mask on. Before I had time to think much, Zephyr exhaled a plume of white gas. It billowed out in front of him, and immediately the breeze whipped it around, bringing it dangerously close to me. I pushed back with the air I controlled. Instead of moving the gas cloud away from me, it tore through it, turning it into wisps that the breeze tossed around even more. This wasn't going to be easy.
Want me to do it again?
Zephyr asked, as the first breath's worth became too thin to do much to anyone. I nodded, this time trying to focus on using the air in a more controlled and gentle way. As Zephyr exhaled, I immediately started to try to move it. For the most part, I succeeded, the white vapor going more in the direction I intended. But as soon as the wind blew, it was torn into strips of cloud and then buffeted around as well. Trying to fight against the breeze, I rethought my strategy and attempted to push all the parts back together again into some sort of ball. But I wasn't gentle enough and only dissipated it further. Again and again Zephyr exhaled for me, and I did my best to control what he sent out. A couple of times I managed to get it into a ball shape, but the second the wind around us blew, it was torn apart, my reaction times not fast enough to compensate.
I think that's probably enough for one evening, Minsheng said,
when I completely overextended myself and blew the next bubble in 1,000 different directions. As he pulled off the gas mask, I dropped my arms to my side, their weight suddenly a lot more than normal. I tried to walk toward the RV, but I found my legs wouldn't move. I was exhausted and hadn't been paying attention to my body's needs. Sinking down to sit where I was, I felt my vision going blurry. I'd been concentrating on using my powers for so long that I'd not been careful how much it was taking it out of me. Minsheng didn't miss a step, pulling an energy bar out of his pocket as he rushed over to me. He broke a piece off and handed it to me. I stuffed it into my mouth as my hunger kicked in. Although my arms hurt to move, I ate the bar as quickly as I could. I'd only used my powers and pushed myself this far on one previous occasion, when the agency had attacked the large warehouse I owned. Thankfully, eating had sorted out my body in almost no time. Wielding the magic my elven heritage granted me used far more calories than an average human normally did. I could only be grateful that the same DNA gave me many other abilities too, and I recovered faster as well. As soon as I'd finished eating the cereal-based energy bar, I felt a little better. "Let's go inside," I said. "I'm more than ready for dinner."
"You and me both, Ayella,"
Minsheng said, as he slipped an arm around me and helped me to my feet. Only once he was sure I was stable did he let me go and fetched the crate of supplies we'd been using. Walking alongside Zephyr and leaning into him a little, I went with the others back to the RV, our home for the last 2 weeks. Chapter 2. Sighing, I put down the deck of cards. We were traveling again. The afternoon was getting late, and Zephyr and I both more than a little fed up with being stuck inside for yet another day. Getting to train outside in the late evenings helped, but it was only possible if we found somewhere out of the way to park. If there were too many tourists or other people nearby, I had to stay in the RV until the next day. It was beginning to get tiring, and it made me more aware that I was out here for one reason only, to find a safe place where I could grow more powerful. Heading toward the front of the RV, I locked eyes on the strange glowing orb we'd found in the woods in California. We'd found it at the beginning of the trip, and we still hadn't gotten to the sanctuary. It was only when I reached Daisy that I had an idea about why it was taking so long. Spread out on the small table just behind the passenger's chair was a map. Daisy was marking our route on it in red pen, adding little crosses where we'd camped for the night. There was nothing logical about the route on the map. Sometimes it went around in a circle, other times it doubled back on itself, and the change in direction never happened at the same point each day. In short, anyone who was trailing us would have a hard time doing so. It also meant it was taking us 3 times longer to get anywhere. That said, our overall progress was clear. We had gradually been heading north and east, traveling through many different states on the way. I sighed as I sat down in the chair opposite her.
"We're getting closer," Daisy said, as she drew a line in pencil from our position the day we'd found the orb and where we were now.
Had we been traveling in a straight line and only going in one direction, we'd have taken about 3 to 4 days to get where we were.
"Is the orb doing that?" I asked.
"No, Chris is. The orb is leading us northeast," Daisy replied, giving me a sympathetic smile.
I knew they were just trying to keep Zephyr, me, and the fire salamanders safe, but they could go out when we stopped no matter where we were, while we stayed cooped up in the RV.
"I really hope we're there soon," I said. "I can't think Nox has followed us this far, or anyone else for that matter."
"You'd be surprised," Chris replied, making it clear he'd heard my words. "A friend messaged and let me know there are agents out and about in his neck of the woods, and we were nearby only a couple of days ago. They don't know what we're driving, but they're showing your picture around."
"Why didn't you say so before now?" I demanded, pain shooting across my shoulders as they tensed. Another not-too-subtle reminder I wasn't getting enough rest and wasn't calm in the current situation.
"I only just got the message. Told Minsheng as soon as I did. He said to keep going for now and head in the right direction for a while."
"But not for long?" I asked, knowing I sounded whinier than I had any right to be, but unable to help myself.
"We'll see. There's not much of the U.S. left. With any luck, we'll find it soon."
I nodded and sighed. "I'm going to make some coffee. I think we could all do with some," Daisy said as she got up.
While she was gone, I pored over the map, looking for locations in the direction we were traveling that might be good places to hide the sanctuary. It wasn't an easy task.
I had no idea what the sanctuary was, let alone how big it was. It could be anything from a building to an entire city to something underground. Maybe even a boat. There were a lot of lakes in this neck of the woods. With another sigh and a cup of coffee from Daisy, I gave up. Ahead, I could see nothing but open road, but we'd only traveled like this for another few minutes, both Daisy and I sipping our hot drinks, when a phone started buzzing. Chris reached out and tapped some buttons.
"Go ahead, Bob,"
Chris said, more loudly than normal.
"I've got you on speakerphone." "They know what RV you're in. You either need to ditch it or get to your destination quick and then lie low."
"Any idea how far behind us they are?" Chris asked as everyone looked his way. Minsheng appeared at my shoulder, his eyes ahead as we all listened.
"I'd guess about a day, but you want to be careful going across state borders. They've got state troopers out looking for you as well, and who knows what other groups they've pulled in to help them." "All right. Let us know if you learn anything else, but don't risk a call again. We'll probably go dark and get a move on."
With that, Chris killed the call and glanced over his shoulder.
"Head straight for the sanctuary," Minsheng said. "We'll keep an eye out for agents and hope they don't catch up with us."
"But if they're looking for the RV?" Daisy's eyes were wide as she folded the map to just show the section ahead.
"We could stay out of any major towns and cities," Chris replied.
I frowned, part of me glad we'd be going in a straight line, but equally not grateful for the tension in the atmosphere.
"We won't let them catch us,"
Zephyr said in my head, making it clear he'd heard everything. I nodded. The room fell into silence, nothing but the sound of the wheels on the road as we drove toward our unknown destination reaching our ears. I tried not to worry, but I caught myself biting my lip more than once. "Do you know what the sanctuary looks like?" I asked Zephyr, as I thought more about our destination. I couldn't believe I hadn't already asked him.
"No, it's not in my memories. I don't think 2VL ever went there."
"Then how did you know where the orb was?"
"It was made by 2VL. She created the sanctuary when everyone wanted reassurance that no matter what happened, they would be safe. It was how she persuaded so many mythicals to join her cause. She promised them protection once the world was safe."
"But none of your ancestors in between went there?"
"Not that I'm aware of."
I sighed. It didn't entirely make sense. I knew 2VL had fought a large battle with some kind of evil force, and the texts implied that the evil force had magic of their own, but there was very little mention of humans and what part they played. Had the world believed in dragons then? Or had she been in hiding as well? I had no way to know the answers. Zephyr didn't seem to be able to tell me. He had humans in his memories, but it wasn't always clear which ancestors' memories they were. It was just memories and knowledge, and it was still all unlocking. On top of that, Zephyr didn't always want to talk about it. I could only imagine that if it was frustrating for me to only have half answers, it was even worse for him. So far, when it began to get dark, Chris had looked for a good place to stop and let me train, while he and Daisy got supplies and made dinner. This evening, as the sun set, we kept driving away from it and toward whatever the sanctuary held. The tense feeling in the RV got to me, and I had to go back to the small room that had been mine for the last few weeks. I'd begun to get used to my nomadic lifestyle. I was on my third home in 4 months, and I'd slept in a few strange places during that time as well. It wasn't ideal. It did mean everything I currently owned and cared about, besides Zephyr and my friends, was stuffed into two bags, a large backpack that had once held the far smaller form of Zephyr, and a slightly larger shoulder bag that had the basket I'd found his egg in, along with the remnants of his shell and several other important items I wanted to keep safe for sentimental reasons. The box I'd received with the warehouse ownership papers had been left behind, and the important documents tucked into a waterproof pouch. The second bag was smaller, and if need be, I was willing to leave it somewhere and come back for it later. I'd already done so twice, but I always made sure the agency couldn't find it.
I had no doubt they'd whisk off the shell pieces if nothing else. Once more, I checked that they were both ready to go at a moment's notice. I only needed to add a phone charger and several sets of clean underwear to the main bag. Then I checked on Minsheng's books. If we didn't find an easy way to transfer everything, we would lose some of those. Already, I considered it a miracle we still had the important ones. I knew they mattered to Minsheng a lot. I'd deliberately guided him to get them stacked in crates that would act as protection in the case of violent situations. Although I hadn't told my Shisu, part of my exit plan if we had to abandon the RV in a hurry and agents were around was to lift all those crates with my abilities and drop them on the agents' heads. Once the agents were unconscious, I would pull them behind us and find a suitable place to leave them and my second bag until they could be retrieved. It wasn't a perfect plan, but I liked imagining battering half a dozen agents with boxes of books full of secrets about how to use my magic and what happened to all the different races so many millennia ago. As I checked the other crates and made sure we'd packed up, I found Minsheng doing the same with the last few books and his personal bags. Open on his bed and clearly supposed to go in a particular space in the bag nearby was a book I'd not seen before. I walked closer, drawn by the symbols on the cover inlaid into the time-stained leather. There were no words on it, so I lifted my eyebrows and looked at Minsheng. I wasn't going to touch an old book without first checking it was okay.
"It's another book that I think is about Tuviel," Minsheng said when he noticed what I was interested in. "It's not in Elvish or English, so I'm having trouble translating it."
"What is it written in?" I asked, as he flipped to a page he had marked. On it was a picture of a white orb and hands that were trying to control or contain it.
"I'm not entirely sure. It's mostly dwarvish, but some of it is archaic, and it's like other sections are in code. It's taking me some time to translate what's between the pages."
I lifted my eyebrows as I bent down and realized I couldn't read a word of it, but there was something Minsheng had said that had me immediately thinking down another route. "There's an elven language?" I asked.
"Yes. Would you like to learn it?"
For a moment, I hesitated. I had not found it easy to learn languages in school as I grew up, but this was the language of my people. Instead of rejecting the offer as I might have several months earlier, I nodded. I wanted to know what I'd been missing out on, but it brought with it a familiar ache. Ever since learning I had been adopted, I'd wondered to whom I'd belonged. It seemed like the truth was far more complicated than I'd imagined, but it would never change the fact that I'd missed out on knowing who I was my entire childhood. The RV slowed down before Minsheng could do anything else, and we both made our way to the front. Had we found it? Was something else happening?
"I need to get some gas," Chris said, as he pulled into the self-service gas station off the interstate we were taking.
I sighed. "Can you get some more energy bars while you're there?" I asked, knowing that if Minsheng's training was going to be as taxing as it usually was, I was going to need them. Chris grinned and nodded as he got out. I had a feeling he'd have gotten them anyway, but I felt like I'd been constantly hungry since I'd begun training with Minsheng. I'd also lost a few pounds. It was one of the rare upsides of all this. I was losing weight by making myself stronger and practicing my funky superpowers.
"Shit sticks," Zephyr said in my head a moment later.
I lifted an eyebrow at him using the expletive I favored.
"I meant to ask him to get some more bacon."
Rolling my eyes, I went to see how much was already in the fridge. Zephyr had a thing for bacon, and he regularly ate more than a package by himself at breakfast each day. I was just counting out the packages and looking behind some of the veggies and condiments in there when Chris returned. He handed Daisy a bag of groceries, but he didn't immediately start driving again. She brought the bag to me, and I helped her unpack it. "There's bacon," I thought as loudly as I could. Zephyr replied with a strange, deep, purring noise, one he only made when he was extremely happy. "Zephyr says thank you for the bacon," I called, earning a chuckle from Chris and a grin from Daisy.
Minchang just shook his head and disappeared into the small area we'd curtained off to be his and Chris's room.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?